Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is help at home with minor home maintenance. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services. Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Iris Bunshaft. And we're having an absolutely wonderful conversation with Dr. Jill Rabin, who is the professor of obstetrics and gynecology, and that is with the Hofstra Northwell. And just before we went to break, Iris, you had another question for Doctor, so if you don't mind repeating it.
Well, I'm sure that you know about, we talked about the triggers a moment ago,
Squeezing.
Oh, we're squeezing, yes, right, that's now. Squeezing that last bit of urine out. And also, your book was written in 2009. Is there anything more that you can add subsequent to that time frame?
The two questions, excellent questions. In terms of squeezing, you never really want to squeeze because that will damage the pelvic floor, just as when you're defecating, you don't want to squeeze if you can help it. It's better to make sure you have enough liquid in your diet so that good fiber so that the stool is able to be eliminated. So squeezing will damage the pelvic floor. Learning how to relax your pelvic floor and allowing the bladder to do its work and contract down so the urethra can allow for the egress of urine. Another important point, which is a lot of women will say that they go to the bathroom and then they put their clothes on, they go ahead and wash their hands, and not within like 2 or 3 minutes they have to go again. So that's called double voiding, and it's not uncommon. It's more common in women who have a drop bladder because that little pocket of the drop bladder is then basically able to come into the urethra. The urine comes into the urethra, so people feel that they have to void again. Much better off if you double void to stand when you think you're finished. You can wipe or dab off and just stand there for a minute or two and allow that urine to come into the urethra and then sit down again and relax the pelvic floor and allow the bladder to completely empty. And that is the best thing to do rather than squeezing. In terms of the book, we are in the process of a second edition of the book, which will be in English and also translated into Spanish. It probably will take about 6 months to a year to complete, but we're doing this because there are many things that are new. The basics are the basics, but the things that are new are different treatments for overactive bladder. For example, there are two new treatments that don't appear in the book. One is called the InterStim. It's basically a pacemaker for the bladder that is placed in the buttock, surgical procedure under anesthesia, obviously, and a test wire is placed into the specific area of the spine where one of the nerves that runs the bladder, that quiets the bladder, lives, and that's called the InterStim.
This is for a very serious bladder problem.
These are for people who have tried everything and still their bladder is running their life, and they have a documented diagnosis of bladder instability, and this is the sort almost like a last resort, but it does work so beautifully for the few who are so troubled by overactive bladder and nothing works. But in terms of a more common type of treatment for people with mild or overactive bladder who can't or don't want to take medications, we have something called pre-tibial nerve stimulation, or PTNS for short is the acronym, and it's basically acupuncture for the bladder, and believe it or not, the tiny acupuncture needle is placed in a specific location where the pretibial nerve is located, on either above the left or right ankle. And it's attached to a grounding wire and electrical stimulator, and it is a 30-minute session once a week for 12 weeks. It is usually covered by insurance. It is covered by Medicare. And the data is, and our specific information in our office is that people, and the national literature, people do very, very well with this, and it's a way of quieting overactive bladder, whether you've tried medication or you simply don't want to take a medication forever or for a long period of time for overactive bladder. So this we're going to be putting into the book. We're doing this currently in our office and in our division of female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery, which is a fancy way of saying female urology or urogynecology, and that is URO gynecology, urology gynecology. We do that in our offices, all of our offices. We have several locations. So those are two very exciting things. There are also some brand new medications on the market that don't appear in the book. There is a skin gel for a bladder medication which quiets the bladder, a patch which is now over the counter for the bladder. So there's many new treatments available, so we are going to be putting that into the second edition. But again, the basics are the basics. I don't think too much is going to change. Anatomy hasn't really changed that much in 10 years.
or in a lifetime.
Actually,
exactly. In man and women's lifetime, I should say, not in each in our own lifetime, things change. Yes. Okay.
In order to be an equal opportunity bladder show this morning, could you give us a little information? I'm reading it in reference to enlarged prostates in men.
In terms of the bladder in men, again, I'm basically a urogynecologist, but I will tell you.
Okay.
So no, that's okay. Since I was trained by the urologists for my fellowship, I did have the opportunity to learn about the male bladder as well. Enlarged prostate is similar to a woman with a dropped bladder. In other words, the urethra is constricted. And when the urethra gets constricted, when the prostate squeezes the urethra to be a narrower diameter, the bladder sees that as an obstruction. And in truth, it is a mild type of obstruction. So the bladder tries to empty and tries to contract and really does everything it can to squeeze. And it gives the man a feeling of urgency, frequency, and incomplete emptying, which is very, very frustrating. And that there are many treatments available for that as well, you know, in terms of medication, surgery, which people know, and some of the newer treatments as well, minimally invasive treatments. For women with dropped bladders, the dropped bladder, as I referenced in the first part of our talk, can come up and squeeze the urethra shut and compress it against the pubic bone. And that's similar to the man with an enlarged prostate. So the bladder in a female, which is dropped, the woman experiences or may experience overactive bladder because that poor bladder is trying desperately to empty. And that urethra is just narrower. And as I mentioned before, it's a very short urethra. And now it's narrowed, and the woman is, you know, constantly, you know, trying to empty her bladder, but it can't fully empty.
Okay.
Most of the time. So that's the issue with that. And residual urine for men and women can increase your risk for bladder infection. So it's important to make sure you're emptying your bladder, and if not, get some help.
Okay, thank you.
Why do both men and women feel the need to urinate much more during the night than they do during the day?
Yeah, that's basically women with dropped bladders or any kind of prolapse or men with a prostate are going to be bothered more at night, even if they're drinking properly and not drinking a whole lot an hour or so before they go to bed or right before they go to sleep. So basically when a woman lies down and she has a prolapsed bladder when she stands up, when she lies down, the prolapse goes back up. So that's why women with dropped bladders can be up all night urinating, because the bladder couldn't empty during the daytime, and that darn bladder is going to get back at you at night, and it's going to empty come hell or high water, basically, literally.
What would be the benefit of catheterizing before she goes to bed?
Well, the benefit would be that her bladder would be empty for an hour or two, but then would fill up again, and she'd still be up because the bladder is used to being constricted, so it's going to act as though it still has to continue to contract. So she's going to be up when that prolapse goes back up.
Night. Okay. I thought maybe get a whole night's sleep out of it.
A great idea, but also there is a risk of infection with catheterization, which is low, but it's not zero.
Mm-hmm. How is this diagnosed that the body releases the urine, fully releases urine?
Well, we used to catheterize everyone to see what their residual urine was, and now we almost never, we very rarely have to do that. We use an ultrasound machine, a specific bladder scanner that's placed, the transducers placed above the pubic bone after a woman or man voids, and we can tell how much is left in the bladder just by a simple ultrasound. But you bring me to an important point, which is it's important for women and men to see their doctors if with a list of questions if they do experience for women prolapse and incontinence or for men incontinence, and to get a diagnosis so that you can have a treatment menu option, a list, and you can choose, you know, and with your doctor's guidance, which treatments are best for you. But don't just stay in the house and leak.
What should a woman expect when she goes to her gynecologist and she comes in and she doesn't believe that she has any particular problems? What can she expect from her gynecologist to be able to address? What kind of tests?
Well, in terms of the bladder, if somebody is, the doctor should be asking about leakage of urine or stool, and if the answer is yes, to begin to do a basic pelvic exam and evaluation to assess for residual urine or prolapse. And beyond that, and beyond making sure there's no infection, at that point, the gynecologist would be referring to a urogynecologist or a urologist, and so that we can go ahead and do our evaluation, an extensive history and physical, and an evaluation, including the post-void residual with the ultrasound, something called a uroflow, so we can see the volume of urine voided per time period, and to make sure there's no infection, a pap test on the urine, and to assess the degree of prolapse and leakage. There are different specific tests we can do to determine, called urodynamics, to determine the type of incontinence. And sometimes we need to do a simple urodynamics at the bedside, and sometimes we do a more complicated one. None of the tests hurt, but it is important to make sure that we get a specific diagnosis.
Okay, we're almost out of time, Doctor. I should have asked this question much earlier. Do you see patients, or it's just research?
Oh, no, we do both. We do research through Feinstein Institute for Medical Research at Northwell, and I see patients in one of our offices.
Could you
absolutely
give me a phone number then for you? I mean, so if somebody listening would like to reach out and make an appointment to see you.
Of course. So that my number at the office is 516-390-9242.
That's 516-390-9242. Terrific. And actually, it's amazing. We're out of time. This has been so informative. I mean, the half hour goes so fast. I really appreciate you taking the time on your busy schedule to reach out and talk with our audience, basically, and inform them of what has to go on. And we hope to have it back on soon.
Thank you so much for having me, both of you.
Thank you. You've been listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.